Right now, it is time for the Media Beat here on Robinhood Radio with David Terechuk. David joins us on a Friday morning. You can find him at his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And once again, the table has been set for us today. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you.
There's a lot going on in this world, David, that the media is involved in covering, especially the past couple of weeks. We'll start off in the good old red, white, and blue, the United States of America, where the president has learned his lesson.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Tell me.
Well, the lesson he's learned is...
I must have missed that part of the story.
No, the lesson he's learned is...
He's learned a lesson, huh?
Yeah, the lesson he's learned is the Senate will let him get away with everything he wants to do.
Oh, that lesson. Oh, sure.
Oh, man.
I think he knew that before it happened.
Yeah.
But, he's... it's not as if he's feeling at all constrained by any of the much-vaunted checks and balances of... our Constitution. He's seen fit this week to use, of course, his favorite media platform, the medium of Twitter. And just to say something about Twitter as his main vector, I was around when the mini blogging site, as it was initially called, was launched. It must have been 2008 at the South by Southwest Festival, which, as you know, I would cover every year for you guys and for other people. I was having a long conversation with Evan Williams, one of the co-founders of Twitter, and I happened to mention that it was a social network, a new social network that he was developing, and he said, "Oh no! You must never call it a social network. It's a news network." Huh. Twitter's intention from the beginning was to create a news vehicle, and I'm afraid all too often that is how it functions. And certainly, it's the main news release mechanism for the president of the United States now. So on Twitter, he decides to exert his influence, his undoubted influence. The bully pulpit was the phrase that Theodore Roosevelt, one of his illustrious predecessors, used for this process. You are in a very influential position, of course, as the president of the United States, and he chose to express his opinion, just the president's opinion, his press secretary said, on various issues, not least in the legal field. And that's what's been causing all the flurry of the latter part of this week.
Well, you know, here's the dumbass thing about this, and I hate to use it, but is that had he not said anything and the judge sentenced Roger Stone to 7 to 9 years, guess what, folks? What could have the president done at that point?
Well, he could swoop in and pardon him.
Bingo.
I suppose.
Bingo.
That's, he's not, it's pretty familiar tactic for him, but sure, he made a bigger deal of it than it would have been otherwise, and indeed it's more than likely, I think we can take this as virtually as read completely, that Judge Amy Berman Jackson, who he singled out with a peculiarly individual ad feminine criticism for being the judge who, now that she's sitting in the case of his friend Roger Stone, he singled her out as the judge who sent Paul Manafort, his campaign manager, to jail, and said that clearly trying to influence upcoming judgment on what sentence to give his other friend Roger Stone, that is almost guaranteed. I think we can assume what I'm suggesting is that the judge is now going to, if the Attorney General feels, as he claims to feel, that he's not able to do his job properly because the president has been tweeting about his judgments, his decisions, the Attorney General's decisions. Then how much is this judge going to feel irritated by presidential interference about her absolute right to decide on the sentence of someone who's been found guilty? She's only been, she was previously only given a request, as it were, from the prosecutors for a particular sentence, up to 9 years, they were saying, which is what irritated Trump in the first place. And now she'll feel perfectly at liberty to be as harsh as she wants, just to, if only to demonstrate clearly, and I think rightly, the total independence of a judge sitting in a federal case.
Well, that's the whole thing. The other kicker on this is that a lot of people think that just because the head of the Justice Department said he thought it was too lenient, that has no bearing on the case. The judge has the right, as long as it stays within the guidelines of what are set up, to do the sentence however she wants to do so. Just another
Absolutely.
One of these distractions that come from the White House, just like now the president saying that he did send a Rudy Giuliani to the Ukraine. Who cares at this point? Who cares at this point, really?
Well, it's interesting that he says it, and it's no surprise, of course, that he finally admits it. Once, as you say, he's been given a totally free rein by the most officious, usually officious kind of instrument of oversight on the president's activities, that is the august forum of the U.S. Senate. But here he is, perfectly at liberty, in his own mind anyway, to exert whatever pressure he feels he wants to. But the interesting thing in a media context about how that admission of his came about, that he did send Rudy Giuliani to Ukraine to gather smear material. After all, his denials during the course of the case being amassed, the impeachment case, the fact is that the person who got this admission out of him was the interviewer in the new venue that Trump has decided to favor for his expressions, Geraldo Rivera. Whatever happened to Geraldo? Well, he's to be found in Cleveland doing a radio show. That's where Geraldo is. Not all the time, of course. He still pops up on Fox News as a far from objective commentator. But there he is running a call-in radio show in Cleveland, and the president calls in. I think it's just another indicator of the cronying. That's grown around Trump's administration. Geraldo, earlier in the week, and this is an interesting venue here too, Geraldo goes on the Sean Hannity radio show, another great fanfare of democracy, and calls the true civil rights leader for the 2020 election. So we're talking high-class, objective journalism here.
It's pretty amazing. Before we head over to Boris Johnson and his cabinet, I want to just hit upon what has been going on at the Democratic Party. It is now DEFCON 5, as the Democratic National Committee is just petrified about Bernie Sanders, and they really. By allowing Bloomberg into this debate, that's just wrong. And I've got nothing against Michael Bloomberg. If he wants to join in and spend his money and run for president and possibly buy the presidency, that's his right as an American and as an American billionaire. But the Democratic National Committee does not have the right to change the rules that kicked out Cory Booker, that cooked out Kamala Harris, that kicked... I mean, they just... To change the rules now... because they're so petrified that if they look at the top of the ticket, it's not the people they wanted at the time, with what they see right now, really puts a stain on the Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, the party, I mean, the DNC at least, it's not the party, remember, but it is the steering organization for elections. And they have to be really careful about propriety and the appearance of any kind of bias. Well, we saw how that worked out in the 2016 elections when, again, or rather, it was a precursor, a prelude rather than a response to the current problem. Their problem then was as now, terror of Bernie running away with the nomination, and they you know put their finger on the scale in favor of Hillary Clinton, which worked out really well, didn't it? And it's the same now. Their clear inability to do what they say and everyone expects them to be, which is impartial in the conduct of a competition between rivals for the nomination. And now they're clearly exhibiting a motivation that can only boil down to a concern about Bernie getting too far ahead. And to change the rules, as you say, is in mid-game, goes against everything that they've tried to claim about their position until now. It's as if the referee was discovered, you know, favoring one side in a sports match. It's just not what the DNC should be doing. You're quite right.
Yeah, you know, they back themselves into a corner, and they're doing this all while there's been 50 some delegates decided. That's all, just 50 some delegates have been decided after the first two primaries, but they are worried because they're looking at the
early states, but yeah. They're highly unrepresentative states. Yeah. That's the same every time, though. Every time that we get to the election cycle, the presidential election cycle every 4 years. It is so disproportionate the effect that Iowa and New Hampshire can have, but this is a media bandwagon effect. Yeah. It's very easy to get things totally out of proportion, but of course politics these days is run on the basis of overreaction so much of the time, and the media is in large part to blame for it, I have to say.
What the media has to do is watch a cooking show and understand that when you have a chicken breast or a veal breast and you pound it out, you can't pound it out into oblivion. You can only pound it out a certain amount where it's going to taste good and it's going to do what it wants to do. The Democratic National Committee just never seems to be able to stop pounding out that piece of meat until they really do damage to themselves. It's an amazing, amazing thing. That's a thing, you know, you get a look at. All right. Now, I want to move.
So you want to go to the other red, white, and blue. The red, white, and blue. The Union Jack colors.
Yeah.
The United Kingdom. How much longer it will be united is a moot point, but go ahead.
Well, I was looking at the BBC site, and he's got his new cabinet in there, and I do not know enough about it to have my own opinion. I look at the BBC where they say, a lot of the commentators over there are saying that he's choosing power over personnel. I'm not sure that that's any different than any initial prime minister when they really get their hands on the job would do. What's your take on the cabinet that Boris Johnson is putting together?
Well, it's no surprise, and as you say, you know, it's what the prime minister would, what any chief executive in a country would want to do once he was established with a reasonably safe majority. In his case, a whopping great majority, and he. He doesn't feel confident because of that strength and stability of his position to make any kind of experiments. What he's doing instead is bolstering himself He's surrounded himself with friends, in other words, and that tends to be what people do. With the notable very significant exception, of course, of Abraham Lincoln, who created the famous Cabinet of Rivals, of course. There was a man with supreme self-confidence at that point. Boris Johnson is no Abe Lincoln, and he needs to be surrounded by people who are going to be yes men and yes women to him. There is, interestingly, a surprise for the Conservative Party, a surprising number of women in this new cabinet and the lower ranks of the Boris Johnson government. That's one point to be said in his favor. The other thing is that, again, for the Conservative Party, although this is a sign of, you know, overall change in the Conservative Party in Britain, quite a number of them are people of color. And that's a sign of the times, and a welcome sign, I think. But the sort of cronyism on Johnson's part is a kind of reflection of the Trumpian cronyism too. As I say, the people who he can pretty safely rely on to be on his side in most arguments, certainly on the whole question of Brexit. We think of it as possibly being solved, but of course it's not. It's still the details of Brexit are now being worked out over the next year, and he's basically got rid of people who are enthusiastic for Europe, and he's promoted people who are solid Brexit people. And that's, it's just a fact of political life that that kind of politician will do that kind of thing. One particularly egregious bit of ill judgment has come out of that, though. In Northern Ireland, as you know, a part of the UK that I take a special interest in, the secretary in the cabinet for Northern Ireland, Julian Smith, has been kicked out and replaced by a strong Brexit guy called Brandon Lewis. The loss of Smith is really sad in an overall political sense, nothing to do with the narrow issue of Brexit itself. Julian Smith has only been in office 200, just over 200 days, 204 days in total, I think. But he's pulled off some amazing political achievements, which I don't think Americans might know that much about the overall background that makes them so amazing. The achievements are that he's changed a moribund situation that developed 3 years ago. The supposedly autonomous government of Northern Ireland collapsed. Stormont is the name of their parliament building, and the usual sort of shorthand name for the governmental process in Northern Ireland is Stormont. So the Stormont government was totally out of action for the last 3 years. Very complicated reasons gathered together to cause that collapse, but it's been a kind of gridlock or a deadlock in terms of active governing over there, and the cabinet minister responsible for Northern Ireland had to rule the place almost like a vice regent in colonial India. So at long last, Julian Smith managed to pull off the impossible. He got those people round the table again, all the different sides in Northern Ireland. Never an easy task, as history has told us very clearly over the last century, and got them to agree on turning it into a working administration again. A considerable achievement, and his reward for that, of course, is to be kicked out by Boris Johnson, because, in the words of the Republic of Ireland's Prime Minister, Julian Smith is one of the most effective politicians of the current era. which is quite a bit of praise from one quite skillful politician about another. And yet there is Smith now just banned to the political wilderness for all his good work.
Well, now when we talk about Brexit and the situation with Northern Ireland, and which is more damaging probably for not only England, Great Britain, but the world, what can happen with the results in Northern Ireland with Brexit, or with if Britain actually crashes out and there's no real trade settlements? I mean, this is a worldwide problem.
Well, global trade is in such a volatile condition now. Anyway, there's pessimism in many directions being expressed. Although, you know, some Trump can point, as of course he does, to ebullient things about the United States economy. Please excuse me. He'll point, for instance, to very high numbers in the stock exchange, but the worldwide scene is not so encouraging. An overall slowing in the second biggest economy of the world. I mean, we're not exactly growing fast ourselves. Nothing that has been achieved in Trump's time, although he would claim otherwise. Is really that impressive in terms of economic growth. We're growing at a very slow rate, but the next biggest economy, China, is by comparison with its recent history, is frighteningly slowed down. And of course, the huge impact of the health crisis at the moment emanating from China, the coronavirus epidemic, is slowing things down even more. And we have an economic forecast that are veering on the gray to black side. And to have one element of that complicated and always incredibly interconnected panoply of world trade be as uncertain as Europe. I mean, one of the biggest trading blocks in the world messed around, as it were, by one of its members leaving and then just not working out a new position, which is the threat. If they don't come to a deal over the next, 10 months now, I think is the deadline that's supposed to be operating, then of course it'll worsen the position overall. And if the United States wants to take advantage of it, which is the subtext all the time when we talk about the United States and Britain coming to a new arrangement as a result of Britain leaving Europe, then we'll see America doing its damnedest to get the best deal it can get out of a very rich market, which Britain remains. Although it's not exactly shrinking, but then it's not exactly growing either. The prize which is America's to grab is not all that valuable, and it will probably redound in the end, and this is what many Brits feel, to America's advantage more than Britain. And there'll be a kind of imbalance in that new arrangement. And one of the particular things that the Brits fear more than anything else is that they're much vaunted and really rather precious to Brits. The National Health Service, which is in itself a huge market for instance, American pharmaceutical companies, you end up with a situation where America will be in danger of dominating that market and essentially exploiting a whole new realm. And the British will feel very badly ripped off by that. They certainly fear that right now. Boris's main job for the sake of his domestic politics is to make sure he protects Britain against rapacious American capitalism. I feel that that's a very sort of ironic position for this America-loving and Trump-loving prime minister to be in.
And we can wrap up the show with Bansky in Bristol. He painted on the side of a building, and it now is covered and protected. It was his Valentine's painting, and he did it on the side of a building.
Well, happy Valentine to everybody, but I think that's a wonderful way for Banksy to have celebrated this day of love.
I don't know whoever owns that building has just made themselves a fortune, is all I can say.
A major artwork they are now in possession of.
Amazing. Well, I'm sure that next week will be just as exciting as this week, David, in the world of media. And we'll see what happens over the course of the next 7 days.
Can't wait.
All right. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
That is the Media Beat with David Tarajuk here on Robinhood Radio. Of course, you can find it on demand as well, robinhoodradio.com. Click on the Media Beat, and we rebroadcast David over the course of the weekend and the noontime hour in the next week as well.